Oppen places great emphasis on the importance of talking with one another about these things. So.
Thank you for the talk. It was very interesting and thought-provoking. I just have a quick question. I don't know enough about Denise Levertov and her political trajectory. And do you think there's some kind of conflict he had about her politics and his politics and how he kind of felt like he could be a poet and a political, but he can't seem to do it at the same time, and hers? I was just curious.
I don't think, from what I understand, I think it was the conflict was more with her poetry than with her politics, that he felt he had made this choice to separate them, and she hadn't separated them. But I also think that, not to psychoanalyze him, but I also think that he was working out his own distress at having made that very painful break and then coming back to poetry, as he says, only when we knew that we had failed. And so he took the separation so drastically, seriously. And I think in that moment, this intense political moment of 62 and this intense personal moment for him of coming back to the U.S., coming back from exile, coming back into writing, publishing the materials. I think he just couldn't stand the idea that someone would be glib about the distinction that was so precious to him. I don't think Levertov actually was glib about it, and I don't think that they had really a political quarrel. I think that's why her letter is so interesting.
Okay, I guess I need to change my question because I understood it to be something of a quarrel or maybe a debate.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a debate.
My understanding is that Denise Levertov had a similar debate with Robert Duncan. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, I mean, I don't think Duncan was as politically active as George Oppen was. Can you say anything about the similarities and differences in the, and did Denise Levertov have a similar argument with anyone else besides those two?
I mean, maybe others know better. Duncan is the famous one, right? And then there was this, and I think that was of longer standing and more intense backing and forthing. And the thing with Oppen kind of flared up and was intense, and then he published the essay somewhere else. They continued to be friends. But no, it's true that with Duncan also, he felt that she was using, as I understand it, he felt that she was inserting politics into poetry in a way that he found glib or distorting of both, but maybe especially distorting of what the proper agency of the poem should be, that she was using the wrong tool for the job, and that was destructive to both the tool and the job. And that's why I feel like the letter is important, and that is one of the things that got me thinking about Eve, is that I feel like in both cases, someone is saying to her, no, 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 you're not doing your thinking right. And if you do your thinking wrong, you'll ruin it for all of us. And you're not being chaste enough. You know, you're not keeping, you're letting things mush together that should be kept firm and separate. And that seems very gendered to me. I guess I should add, that seems very gendered to me, and then also it's the kind of thing I worry about also, right? I mean, if I thought that Oppen had just been like, oops, like misogynistic slip in this essay, then it wouldn't be that interesting, but I don't think that at all. And I think that he's working out in his own mind and kind of in dialogue with, or in awkward dialogue with Levertov, as I said, something that I feel like is super important, which is what is the tool and what is the job and how can the political be kept out of the poem? How can it come into the poem? And he's worrying about that with a great deal of ethical urgency.
Isn't
That's why it's so strange that he seems to make it so gendered, right? That it's an art of the masseur and the perfumist, you know, that only women want to be beautiful when they make something.
So, I'm struck by the metaphysics you're describing, or that you're attributing to Oppen, is very close in many respects to the philosophers that we know he was reading, to Maritain and Heidegger, in a number of different ways. But with Maritain in particular, the focus is on a movement away from self-examination, from sort of critical philosophy, a Kantian critical philosophy, to what he calls critical realism, and a realism that first accepts the world and doesn't question the faculties of understanding before it understands. It seems like you're describing Oppen having this vision of how language works and how perception works, and sort of the priority on perception as opposed to a priority on epistemology, which for Maritain and maybe for Oppen would puts a limit on what science might do, and the way in which what Maritain says is the tendency of science to become a divinity of its own. I'm curious though, in Oppen's reading of other poets, right? So even the assumption that we know Milton in order to read it, when we're reading Oppen, is an assumption of a kind of elusive quality in the character of the poetic arts or of the artistic object, which bears no relationship to that kind of ontology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's impossible to imagine a poem.
And the essay is packed with these references. It's like, it reminds me of Smithson, where he's just like, every sentence is like, oh, and I read this, and there's a relationship to this, and let me make a reference to that, and I want to compare this. It's just like chock-a-block with those kinds of prior, those tissues of text. But it's also, it's not a poem.
Yeah.
But of course he does do that in the poems as well. And I think that, again, I feel like one of the things that's really interesting to me about this essay and endearing about it and useful about it is that he's struggling with himself so much. And in that poem, where he says that, you know, serpent Ouroboros, whose tail is in his mouth, he's really pressing on the fact that it's Satan whose mind is its own place. It's, you know, that's a satanic, a devilish, and he uses the word evil in that poem, an evil position. But then of course it isn't, because it's a position he's taken. Just like for Milton, it is and it isn't at the same time. And so that like raw or fresh or primary perception, but then the fact that, well, actually it's totally tutored by text and history and experience. And also it's wrong a lot of the time, you know? Like it can perceive, the mind can perceive its own place and be totally wrong. And I think Oppen is very honest about admitting that, you know, fool object, he says. And he's sort of, That passage of that poem is really hard to track, but basically he's kind of walking along Atlantic Avenue and finds like a dime in the gutter and thinks that's like the mind, you know? Like, leave it alone. It is deadly, you know? Like, it's some cute little shiny thing you might pick up in the street. Your perceptions, your ideas, your personality, your individuality, leave it alone, it's deadly. Even though it's the title of the essay in which he's arguing this impassioned thing that he's staked half his life on.
Yeah, I was just going to say two or three things about, first of all, about Denise Levertov and the quarrel, both with Oppen and with Duncan, that it seems that Duncan's distress about, to put it mildly, about Denise Levertov was that she assumed another person's position in some of her poetry, mm-hmm. and especially in regard to the war, to the Vietnamese war, he felt that this was an untruth, that one couldn't take on someone else's experience. You could take on your own experience in relation to their experience, but you couldn't take on their experience, and that was very upsetting to him. And the whole idea of war for Oppen, in a certain way, becomes almost the reconciliation between, in a strange way, I'm using the word in a strange way, between the political and poetry, because the source of his poetry in many ways is in that moment in the foxhole. You know, the girder still itself amidst the rubble, which is Reznikov's line.
And he says, Oppen says that while he's pinned down in this foxhole and thinks he's going to die, and the guy who's begging him to save his life does die, that this line from Reznikov keeps running through his mind, and the line is the girder still itself among the rubble. Or actually, that isn't quite the line,
it's
right?
He misquotes it a little bit. I'm not pretending to quote it exactly here, but it's that moment of utter physical survival that then becomes the source for him, I think, of where poetry can come from, that he considers Reznikov in that way to actually be his master, mm-hmm. that he gets it in that way.
Yes, of course. And again, this is one of the places that the gendered thing slips in for me, because I feel like there's this kind of double move in thinking about the feminine technologies. And in one way, he's kind of saying, as this image recurs in these different sites in Oppen, that it's kind of to care for the body, to care for physical extremity is kind of a woman's job. But it's also kind of a dumb job. It's, you know, it's a domestic job. It's feminine care for the other that makes you distort and lie. You take on the other, like the mother taking on the child, so you can be overly nice and pretty things up and protect. And he doesn't want to do that because of that doubt and that honoring of the extremity of that risk.
Yeah, the essay is one thing, but then in the poetry, there are places where he himself does take on that attitude, I think, as you were talking about before, that this is an essay and it's not the poetry. And I'm thinking, for example, of the sparrowhawk landing on the windowsill, where he takes on that kind of look at me and assumes, he's not assuming it, he's basically saying, this is part of who I am, too.
Yeah, there's another poem that is also in part of the Levertov thing, where she has him be a cuckoo, is it? And he writes back in a different poem, but he makes himself a hawk.
What a great talk. Thank you so much. I'm curious about your positioning of the mother. Like, why is the mother in your talk? I began thinking that she must be the answer for, like, these feelings of Oppen, or the origins of his feeling about the eveness or Levertovness of women in general, and that she was, her disappearance or whatever, brought this up in him.
And then, go ahead, Kevin.
But what I was thinking was that your kind of the theater of your talk, the theatrics of it, made me think that I was like, maybe it was Mary Oppen, the one who he lived with so long, that was like, she was that person, but you made it the mother. And I noticed that you thanked George and Mary at the beginning.
I should have thanked Elsie.
And then you at the end, you turn to this picture of the two of them that you closed with, and you clapped and bowed your head as though to preempt the suspicions of your audience that, well, I guess it can't be her because she's inviolate.
That Mary is the bad mother?
The bad woman, or the feminine, the maker of the feminine.
He's pretty careful. It comes up quite often that Oppen circumvents that.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to feel sometimes, again, like, not to over psychoanalyze, but the Levertov thing sometimes feels a bit like a screen for Mary. But he also takes it on himself. You know, he says, we lied to Linda. And he says at one point, there's an amazing moment in a letter. This talk has like 12 footnotes or something, because I kept taking things out of the talk so it wouldn't be too long. But then I was like, but I don't want to forget that. So I stuck them all in footnotes. And he says at one point in a letter, there were some 15 years that political loyalties prevented me from writing poetry. After that, I had to wait for Linda to grow up. Yes, the poem says, I don't like to die. Papa couldn't say it. Buddy says it, because he was called Buddy as a kid in his own family. Go lean on someone else. And so there's this way where, like, part of the way that he theorizes the break from poetry to himself is that he was being a parent. He was being a good parent, and he couldn't do both. So I think that he does, I think he protects Mary. But they're so fused that it's also kind of protecting himself. But then he also incriminates himself. And why is Elsie in my talk? Because she does seem kind of like the key to me. Yeah. I mean, she does seem like the Eve of this story. She seems like that quote of, where is it? I'm not going to turn to exactly the page, but where he says that the mother, empty space must be the mother from which we are born, deserted too outside a closed door of nothingness. You know, that, and he has an existentialist courage about that. That, like he says, she was right to do it. That you're, he's sort of like, okay, so I distorted my life to take good care of my kid, but it's fine not to. And I did not compromise my politics to take care of my poetry, and that was right. You know, so there are like these complicated maneuvers about when connection and when rejection, and it's impossible for me not to think about him at 4 in that equation.
So, this kind of idea of the artist is like this philosophical individual, you know, closed off from the world, in their own mind. It's kind of like an antiquated idea in
a
way.
He's not saying you're closed off from the world in your own mind. You're actually totally porous to the world in your own mind. It's just that your mind isn't the same as the world, and it's tricky.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's a.
But he's not. It's not an ivory tower situation. That's the problem with it, or you know that's why it's difficult.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly an idea that remains relevant to me as a young artist today, and many people I know. But at the same time, it's like kind of the critical discourse around art in the last century has taken so many twists and turns, and a lot of them around this tension that you're talking about between the artist and the activist. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about where like kind of contemporary art stands in relation to this binary today, especially around, like, for example, social practice, mm-hmm. where it's like art is this name that you give to things as a kind of passageway are a pretext for our activism.
Yeah. I'm thinking of him saying there are situations that cannot honorably be met by art. And I feel as though, like, I run that over and over in my head, and sometimes that seems like a totally awful thing to say, and patently untrue in thinking about political questions. And, you know, I feel like I've been more educated politically by artists than probably anybody else. Certainly than self-professed political people. On the other hand, it's manifestly true, you know, that urgent political crisis requires attention to it, not something else. And that's what he's talking about, as I understand it. He's not saying you can't write poems about things that happen in the world, or make a social practice project in which you construct some sort of group endeavor, make a meal, or make a structure, or make an experience. He's saying that if you don't respond directly in kind, there's a problem with the response. So, for example, he and Mary, or it's actually Mary, it's in her autobiography, they talk about, they ran away to Europe as good young artist expatriates and met Pound and started a press and were living the bohemian dream. And he wrote a very well-received book in that time and had sort of launched himself to be the hot young thing. And they came home, and Mary talks about seeing people begging on the street. And she said, seeing people that could have been our fathers. And they just dropped everything and started doing political work. And they talk about it a lot in different contexts. It stayed current to them all the way through to the rest of their lives that they tried to make clear this point, that they just felt like it was apples and oranges, like write all the poems you want. What's going to feed this guy? This guy has kids. What's going to feed his kids? Your poems? No. So feed his kids. And it wasn't complicated to them, so they say. I mean, obviously, it was very complicated emotionally, but that part, to the end of their lives in interviews and stuff. And Oppen says in a poem, I am a man of the 30s, no other taste will change this, right? And that's a reference, right, to Dante, is it? And to the child who has, the parent who has cannibalized the child. So the sense that, like, this is a violence we're talking about, this is a loss, it's a sacrifice, but you don't have a choice ethically, and so therefore it's kind of not a problem. They felt that very strongly, and I don't know what I think about that. I'm baffled by that. You know, really, I see it in a lenticular way. Sometimes I think, well, that makes absolute sense. And I wouldn't feel so insane watching the video of the shell-shocked child in Syria who, like, can't even cry in the operating room if I thought that I could, if I had some political response. And I don't care about an art response to that. That seems hideous to me right now. And only possibly to make a, like, the worst, grossest poem in the world. If, like, that just seems, like, awful to me. But does that mean that it's not, should never, you know, after Auschwitz, no poetry? No. So I don't know what I think about it. I wrote the talk to try to figure it out. I'm hoping you guys will explain it to me. You can't stop now. We haven't figured it out.